All right, good morning. My name is Jan Nelson, and I'm a Senior Program Manager Lead.
And I'm Cameron Larum. I'm a Senior Program Manager.
We both work in Windows, in the Windows International team, and part of our focus is driving world readiness inside the company and also having a focus on how that works for folks like our developer community. So today we're here to talk to you about creating world-ready apps. And I'll click it for you. There we go. So there's some areas that we're going to touch on today. We're going to talk about the global market opportunity. We're going to give you some world-ready app demos, get into the code. We're going to show you some of the globalization that we support. And then we're going to take you through a translation process as well. So let's move forward. So the global market opportunity, you've just spent a couple hours being exposed to a lot of what's going on with Windows 8.1 and how we've made a lot of improvements. When you think about the store and your access to the world, we're looking at driving into a lot of markets. We're talking about local currency support for your customers in lots of markets and that you could translate into the 106 languages. So your reach potentially is vast. We want you to think about if you work in your language and you're used to working in that, what can you do to simply add languages and how can we support you with that so that you can reach additional markets? One example that I've got here on the slide is if you look at the population of the United States as one large market with 316 million or so folks, you can see that from the census data, 35 million of those people prefer to speak Spanish at home. And so that's a second market within this market. And of course, if we look at other parts of the world, if we look at the European Union, language density exists everywhere. And so it's useful to think about adding languages or going multilingual as an opportunity that you should investigate. Our role here is to see if we can't help lower the bar to make that more easy for you to remove friction. So when you're designing for a global market, you need to think about the customer and their experience is that they get the content in their language, that the data is formatted correctly for them, so date, time, currency, those globalization pieces, and that their text input method just works. So the IME is rich and works properly, or touch, or whatever the keyboard layouts are. From your view, we think that it's about being cost-effective. The world of app creation, we really need to keep it as friction-free as possible so that you can really optimize your business. Of course, the code base needs to be identical across all the languages. Separating the code from any UI text that needs to be translated so that you can get that, getting it separate from the source code makes it very simple and it secures your code base as well if you're going outside. And your support for linguistic and cultural needs of all the users needs to be addressed. So we want to go ahead and do a demo?
Yeah, let's go ahead and jump into a demo here. So I'm going to go ahead and just create a really simple application. We're going to show how to take just a standard Visual Studio template and then apply some localization basics to it. Here you'll see that I have Visual Studio up on the screen. What we're going to do is we're going to run through, create an app. We're going to add some localizable resources. I think pretty much everybody knows how to do that. We're going to show how to hook those into your XAML. This might be a refresher for some, but it might be new information for others. We're going to show how to add language-specific resources to your project in the old-fashioned way and the interesting new way that we have to do it. And then we're going to walk you through the set and the language preferences to show you how to test your software for other than English market. So let's go ahead and jump right in. So I've got Visual Studio 2013. I'm running the Pro Edition, but this would also work in the Express Edition. So let's go ahead and start up. I'm just going to pick a new XAML project using C#. I'll just leave it app name 1 because that's really unimportant for our demo today. So this is the standard Visual Studio template. Pretty familiar if you just create a standard store app. Nothing special or modified about the template. So I'm going to come down here. And to save us some time on typing, I'm just going to add two text boxes in here. Got on my paste buffer, we'll just throw them on the screen. Pretty straightforward, centered on the screen. Nothing rocket science at this point. Okay, at this point now what I have is I have a really boring English-only app. So let's go ahead and spruce it up a little bit to make it a really boring multilingual app. So I'm going to go ahead and first thing, is I want to make my application target English as the root language rather than English US. And I'll get into that later as our presentation as to why I'd want to do that. But for now, just understand that I'm going to boil it down just to EN. So let me go ahead and do that. And then, as you probably know, the way you manage this is you have to add in the strings into a language folder. So I'm going to match that with English UN as a folder. And I'm going to add some resources to it. So let's go ahead and add another item, and that's where we're going to go to our general tab and select resources file. So now this probably is familiar. Basically, we have a ResW file that we can open up and start adding some resources. Now, I'm going to add in a hello string. If I can type it correctly today. And this is going to be welcome to build. And I'm going to add a comment, right? Okay. And as you look back on the screen here, we also had a creating a Radio World app. So I'm going to go ahead and throw this in too. Right? So we're just going to call it World Ready. All right. Nothing really rocket science here. Now we have resources, and they also are mimicking what we have in our XAML. So let's go back to our XAML, and what we want to do is we want to update our XAML to reference that string. And what it will do is, if you've noticed in the properties, I did .text. Hope that's big enough on the monitor over there. The reason I did .text is it will take the resource name, and then the dot represents the property. So back in the XAML, text is the property that we wanted to have the localization data applied to. So we just use an XUID, and we give it the name that we put in our resource file, so hello. And I'm going to change this to be welcome from build just to show that it's different. Okay, I'm just going to run this just to show that we're getting some data coming in here. Okay, welcome to a build, so it's coming out of that ResW file that we created. Pretty much still straightforward. But what we have now is we have the basis of an application that is now understanding localizability. So what I would do to add in French, for example, is I would kind of repeat the same process traditionally. I'd come up here, let's say I'd add a new folder, I'd type fr, and then rfr to fr, if I wanted to go France, France, and then I'd add another ResW file. Well, there are tools that help synchronize some stuff, but we think we have a pretty good tool for you. So what I'm going to do is, I've pre-installed the multilingual app toolkit into our Visual Studio environment. So within Visual Studio, we have a tools menu now to enable it. The reason we enable it rather than automatic is because you do need to set your application up to be localizable first. So we don't want to conflict if you don't want to do that. So now that it's enabled, what you'll see is that we have our project name and then a code with an XLF file. And that QPSP loc, let me come back to that in just a second. That's a pseudo language, but let me come back to that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a quick build, and that build will populate that XLF file for us. And you can see that we successfully built with the toolkit extension in the product. So now what I can do is I can say, all right, now I have these language files, and what do I do with them? Well, we have the ability to generate machine translations for them. We can send them off for translation, we can import them, and we can even do some recycling. For right now, I'm just going to generate, and we'll come back to those a little later. So what we've done now is we've generated two resources on this pseudo file. Now, pseudo is not a language you'd normally ship, so I like to call this our debugging language. So what I'm going to do is go into our language preferences. I'm currently set up for English United States and French in France. I need to add pseudo in. So since pseudo is not a consumer language, it's one that we use to debug and to make sure our resources aren't truncating or that we have over-localized or something like that, we need to look it up by its code. So just do a QPS PLOC, and then it will show up. Now I can select that as one of my languages.
And this is in Windows. So if you type this in just any distribution of Windows, you will find QPS-PLOC.
Yep.
As a locale.
Yeah, this is not new for Windows 8.1. So it's exposing through a UI is new, but for 8.0, but this is not new for Windows in general. So I've made up my preferred language, which since I'm testing with it, that's how I want to do it. So let's come back to our app, and let's run this again. Now you notice I haven't done anything fancy other than just hit the generate of the translation. Now, I'm looking at this, and I'm going, what the heck is this? So what we've done with the sudo, and here's where some of the real advantages of using sudo instead of like saying just machine translation of French, is with sudo we're able to put a unique ID on it, what we call our tracker ID. And with this ID, it will be unique to your project, and so you can use it for testing to go, oh, if I have two strings that say okay or hello, because they're on buttons but in different locations and being accessed by different resources, this will track me down to the particular one. So if I'm tracking down problems, I can get this information back and immediately find my strings. The other thing that we do is you notice these brackets. If I can see them with the mouse right up here. With these brackets, those indicate the start and end of a grouping of text. So I'll be able to tell if I'm concatenating two strings, which can be challenging for your localizer. Not all languages are in the same noun-verb order. I also have a couple of spacers, and then we've done some markups on the particular characters to show that it's still readable, but not the ones you'd originally entered. Now, one of the things I'm looking at is my welcome is cut off, which means that I'm probably going to have difficulty when I go to a German or other languages that are longer than English, which is quite a few of them. So this is another area where sudo can help you, because if this was in French or German, I may not know that, except for this being cut in half, I may not know that there's supposed to be more letters at the end of it. So this helps me quickly identify that. I also can see that my Creating World Ready apps doesn't have any markups on it. So I'm probably not getting that into my localization, or if I am, I'm probably not referencing it. So let's go ahead and go back to Visual Studio. And what I can do is I can come here, let's go back to our main. And what my problem here with this one here is probably pretty obvious, is that I've accidentally typed in a width, right? So I have hard-coded the width of this, which causes havoc with localization, as you saw. So let's remove that. And then let's come back over here, and yeah, you saw me not type it. I have my my XID, right? So let's change that to, I think I called it World Ready. Let's just go ahead and run this again, and now we should have an app that is World Ready, except for I didn't get this in here. That is probably what it is. Let's take a look at that. So that's a great catch. So
that's good.
This is the other thing is, remember, it's the property you want, and it's the name of the attribute, and then the property on the attribute. So .txt is exactly what the problem is here. Way to jump ahead on the demo. So now I love it, though. It's great. You're paying attention. So, of course, now I got to recompile because it's a different resource. And that's the other thing I want to get to later is this file automatically synchronizes. So what happened is, even though I machine translated earlier, I translated it with a different resource ID. When you change your resource ID, we consider that to be a different resource. And so now all I have to do is come in here and say, stop my progress, and then come in here and say regenerate, and I should get one resource translated. Now when I run, I'll have sudo on both. Okay. So now, this is a very simple example, but just to show what you can do to help make sure your application is going to be ready when you add additional languages to it. Okay? So very quick example of what we can do with Windows 8.1, with the toolkit, and with some of the automatic services that are available to you. Okay, I'll go ahead and switch back.
Okay, let's go to the next slide.
All right.
So Cameron mentioned the multilingual toolkit, app toolkit, and what we've just talked about is the integration with the Visual Studio IDE. So as an extension, it works on all SKUs. So folks who are working in the Express SKU can get the same benefit as folks working in a premium SKU. The sudo language for in-house testing, you can see that there's some interesting uses with it. When you think about that unique ID and being able to maybe do some test automation against that, if that's part of the scale of your operation. Just going and hunting down resources if you've got a more complex set of code to work through. The Microsoft Translator is built in as a service into both the IDE instance and also into an editor that comes in the toolkit, and we'll get into those details a little bit later in the demo. Cameron showed briefly that there's an import and export, and we'll demonstrate that as well so that you can hand things off and get them back. Also mentioned that we pay attention to the state of whether it's a new tree, if it's a new resource ID, that we consider it to be a new resource. And so later in the demo here, we'll go a little bit more in depth in the feature set of this toolkit. We think it's a very important piece in lowering the bar for you. So let's move forward. So I want to talk a little bit about globalization. Here's a list of some of the globalization namespace and classes in Windows 8.1. We did a lot of work in 8 and have continued that work, enhancing things for 8.1. We're not going to go through each one of these today, but we are going to talk about calendar and date time format. And Cameron's going to give you a demonstration of what that looks like with an app that he's built, so you can kind of see in an easy way some of the value that the globalization APIs bring. Of course, you know, we don't want developers to do roll their own stuff when we have rich APIs to support you. So we want you to go ahead and take a look. We've got resource links to all the data on this at the end of the deck.
Yes.
Cool. Let's move forward.
All right. So some of the globalization APIs, again, there's a lot of them, but we're just going to cover a few of them given the time frame that we have here today. So on the globalization APIs, some of the extensions that we've made to the calendar is we have time zone functionalities now. So I can actually get the time zone of my current machine and use that in my application quite easily just by calling calendar.getTimeZone. The other thing I can do is my local time zone is interesting, but doesn't do me any good when I'm talking about, you know, applications all around the world and using different calendar functions. So we have the ability to change the time zone. So I can create a calendar object and I can say this needs to be, you know, East Coast time zone or something like that. We can also get the time zone back as a string. So if I want to display to the user what their time zone is, I can give it to them in a variety of formats through the time zone as string functionality. And the other thing is daylight savings time. I want to be able to determine whether the current time and date and time zone represents a daylight saving times or not for that particular calendar object that we've created. I don't know if you're familiar with the date time formatting. That's an existing API that has now been extended to also support the time zone formatting information. So for in this case here, I'm doing a particular date and I'm using it for the American Guatemala time zone. Okay, let's go ahead and jump into another demo that shows some of these. So, to kind of represent this, we made, yet another simple app because, you know, we want to make sure we drill exactly down on the topics. And we thought, how many times have I scheduled a meeting for people that I know all over the world where they're calling me up and saying, dude, it's 2 a.m. at my time. Don't do this to me. So we thought it'd be really cool to use the Node globalization APIs to actually say when their time is that they can meet. So let's go ahead and run this first. And then we'll walk through some of the code that we use to support it. So this is a mock-up. We made it similar to the meeting invite in the Windows 8.1 calendar function. I have myself here, and you know, I put the meeting date down it. So if I change the time on the meeting date, it changes my object. Pretty straightforward. The little yellow box inside my color box indicates that I am currently in daylight savings time. And you can tell by the text, I'm Pacific daylight time. So let's go ahead and grab ourselves some attendees. And we've pre-populated some, obviously, for the demo. And let's add these into our system. And now what we have is, for example, we have Bill who's in South Africa. You know, it's 10 p.m. his time now. So if I were to schedule a meeting at 1 o'clock today, it'd be 10 o'clock for him. And that may or may not work. I definitely would want to coordinate ahead of time rather than just blindly send it off and doing that bounce back and forth about, oh, can you reschedule? Here's a new proposed time. We've all been there, right? So the other thing is that I see that Masha, who is in Central Europe, is actually in daylight savings time where no one else is. Was kind of curious. So who else would be there? So if I'm going to come down to October, what happens is Kia, who's in Australia, is now in daylight savings time because, you know, their seasons are opposite here in the northern hemisphere, so that would make sense. But what you also notice is, and I've had this problem with my developers around the world, is they'll call me up and says, your daylight savings time has just changed. Can you move the mean in an hour? Because now it's really early for us. So what this allows us to do is you can see that with daylight saving time in September or in October, Kiwa is at 7 a.m., whereas if I did it this month, it's at 6 a.m. So that could affect you as you start to roll stuff back. If you're working on the edge of maybe someone's published work hours, you can kind of incorporate that and go, okay, how would this affect them 3 months down the road, 4 months down the road? All right, pretty straightforward demo, pretty easy to understand. Put a Bing map up to show their geolocation just to give an idea of a visual effect of the time zones as well. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into the code on this one. So again, pretty straightforward. If I come down here, I've got just a standard view model to pull data up. And what we have is these are the time zone functions that we're using. So whenever I update the calendar, date and time, I just trigger an event and the event calls this function eventually. So what we have here is we have the date time formatter is a template. If you're familiar with previous use of it, it's a template that now has the ability to do the time zone. And I'm requesting back the full time zone. I can also do abbreviated time zone, so I can do like a PST or stuff like that. This here is really all it takes, and I basically say, this is the time that I've scheduled the meeting for, and this is the time zone of the participant, or in my case, of myself. And I said, give me back what the time zone string will look like for that. And I display it on the screen. And that was the bottom part where it had the date. As you can see here, we have, in no particular order, we have our year, our minutes, or time zone. And the other area that you saw represented in the quick demo was the yellow box inside the main box that indicated whether it was daylight savings time or not. And that's simply a matter of creating a calendar object and saying, you know, let's set the time for the calendar object, and then let's say, let's set the time zone. And with that information, then the system, the globalization APIs, are able to give you whether it's daylight savings time or not. And I just enable or disable the visibility on the box to show on screen. Pretty straightforward. The other thing is, this will come into the locale that's on your machine. So let's switch to French for a second here. So again, we're going to go back to that toolkit. I'm going to enable it on this one here. And again, there's our pseudo language, so I debug using pseudo. And the Windows APIs and the calls that you make actually understand sudo, so they will show up in sudo. But let's add a new language in. So I'm going to go ahead and add a translation languages. Now, in this dialog that pops up, we get the list of the languages that are available on the system. And I'm going to add French in. But the one thing that I really want to point out here is you can see where we have the Microsoft Translator icons. These indicate that you'll get those translations through the machine translation. In this particular case, the toolkit provides static translation for the Microsoft Translator service for free. We don't have a 2,000 character limit. You can use this in your products and get all the translations you want. So let's go ahead and add French in. Again, I build first to populate the XLF file. And that's just part of how the system works. And now what I'm going to do is I'm just going to right-click both of them. And I'm going to say, let's go ahead and just machine translate. While we're not using sudo for this particular part of the demo, I'm also have it available. Again, I need to go over, and I've already preset this up so it's localizable like we saw in the first demo. And I'm going to go ahead and switch this over to be French as my primary language. And I'm going to do a fallback to sudo. Okay? So let's go ahead and run this again. And now we're in French. And so I did a good job of localizing everything because I showed how what happens if you don't in the previous one. But now even our titles, my date time formatting is now in French. My calendar controls are in French. Everything just naturally switched. And as Jen was referring, we don't want to roll our own. We want to make sure to use the system APIs because it gets really complicated when you start talking about all of the markets that Windows is available in. If you let us do the work for you, you just get it for free. So that's pretty much it.
Okay, let me go back to the other.
Yeah, let's go back to the other one.
Okay, so in looking at that, we've looked at the calendar, we've looked at time zones, we have other globalization APIs, we can look at currencies. So I encourage you to look at all of those resources after the fact. We also want to talk about a translation model and the extensibility we've got in this toolkit moving forward, and some assets that we have. So we've got terminology. When you think about Microsoft and all the products that we've built over the years and that we ship, we have a lot of strings that we translate, and we store those internally. We also have style guides that we provide to our translators and anybody.
to take a look and think about the conventions that we use, what kind of voice we speak with, what works. There are things, other areas beyond world readiness, but protocols. And so they're very useful to look at. If you go to the Microsoft Local Language Portal, you'll see access points to the style guides, to the terminology, and to those UI strings. Those are all available. I'll go ahead and give you an example of what the page looks like on MSDN. You can go, if you've got an MSDN or a TechNet subscription, you can get access to these glossaries. And these are UI string translations. You can download them as a CSV file. And when you have them, then we have some ability to help you now leverage those resources. We've tested them. We've shipped them in, you know, with Windows, 106 languages. And so can you leverage them is the thing to reduce the cost of your translation even further. So with that, let's go ahead and take another look at how that works.
All right, so
go to the next.
So I went ahead and, again, we created just another demo app. And this one here is a Windows Phone app as well as a Windows Store app. And we're focusing on the Windows Store app. And for this particular demo, we're going to talk about how we can edit our translation strings, how we can have friends and family or even professional translators get access to our XLF file and go from there. So let me actually enable a toolkit because it's always the first step once you're ready to roll. And I'm going to add in French for this particular one. So let's, I don't know why we're picking on French today, but it seems to work. Okay. And again, I'm doing the root language, but I could easily expand off to do particular, if I want to do French Canadian, and I want to do just the particulars for French Canadian, I could only localize those strings and it would fall back to just the default French. Okay. So now I have French put in here, and I'm going to go ahead and just generate machine translations. And then I'm going to go ahead and open this up in the editor. Now, this here is a standalone translation editor. This is why we did not build it into Visual Studio. If you download the Multilingual App Toolkit, the editor comes with it by default. If your friend doesn't have Visual Studio, it will only install the editor. That way, it only puts the footprint down on the machine for what they have. If they don't want it and they do have Visual Studio, they could just say, only give me the editor. But this makes it really easy. It's a 3 megabit download or megabyte download. It's really easy to distribute out. So, I forgot to do my first step, build first. Again, always build first. So now I'm going to go ahead and bring this up, and now you can see that we have our strings, and our strings aren't translated, all right? But you're kind of going, okay, well, I see that you have the Microsoft Translator, but I have a bunch of glossaries. I have a bunch of translation memories in my system, and I don't see how I can use it in yours. Well, that's where we can help out, too. So what we've done is I've created just a really easy sample provider. And let me walk through how you would activate that. Let me bring up the font a little bit on this. See if that's too big. Nope, that works. Okay, so with the Multilingual App Toolkit, we provided a scaling provider model. And what that means is if you have a provider that supports English to French, that's great. But if you have two of them, how does that work? Well, what we've done is we've put them in order. Like, here's our pseudo provider. This only handles pseudo, so it won't do anything except a target language of QPS PLOG. But this one here is the Microsoft translation provider, which will handle a whole mess more, and it'll actually give you machine translations as a great starting point, or actually a reasonable language to ship if you don't have another option. What I want to do is I want to extend this out, and I have a file here, so I'm just gonna copy it over. Actually, I like to keep my original files. So let me rename this real quick, just so I can come back to it if I wanted to. And then I'm going to place a new one on. And what this one has is I've already pre-installed a very simple, just a demonstration example of a provider. And what the provider does is we took one of those downloads off of the UI strings from MSDN, and we actually took the Windows 8 one, and we imported it into basically an XML file that has name value pairs. Really straightforward, pretty boring, not horribly performant, but great for a demo. And then we've added it to this translation manager XML file, which is our configuration file for the toolkit. Both the Visual Studio IDE as well as the editor consume this, and so when you change it in one spot, You get it everywhere. And what we've done is we've put our provider, for our sample provider, ahead of the Microsoft translation provider. And what that does for you is when it finds an exact match, because we're very particular when we're doing translation memory, an exact match will cause it to use that. And if it doesn't find an exact match, it will come back and say, oh, I don't have one. And it will go, oh, who's my next provider who can support, in this case, English to French? And that would then be the Microsoft translation provider. And so what would happen is you would get your highest quality strings first, and then it would cascade down to your suggestion level strings. Okay? And it really is easy as writing a provider with about 5 APIs and then adding it into the configuration here. So the other thing I want to do is, now that I've added that provider, and I want to come back here, and I want to relook at the add translation strings. So if I go back to French, you'll see now I have a new provider listed. I've only enabled it for French in this particular case, but now you'll see that we have our sample provider, and it's listed in priority order, sample provider, and then Microsoft Translator. So even as you're working your system, you can see how it's going to be translated in the order, so you don't get many surprises that way. All right. Let me go ahead and bring this back up. And now that I have my sample provider as my primary one, I get the sample provider's icon indicating that's going to be my primary one. And what I want to do now is I want to come over to, I think my resources has a good option. And you can tell that now our sample provider had two strings that were recycled to resources, both uppercase and lowercase, as well as the Microsoft Translator service providing us a resource. Now this one's a pretty straightforward one to localize, so the samples happen to match. Sometimes with longer strings, you will get ones that don't match exactly, and you can then pick the one you want. So in this case, I want to use one from the sample provider because as I look through the list, I'm comfortable with its selection. So I can just apply that, and now it's marked as translated. So let me get into the translated state of this. I don't want to get too heavy into the workflow. Basically, we have on our translation strings, which is an advantage of using the XLF file over just multiple ResW files, is I know the state of each string, whether it's translated or it's been updated or any of that information. So we have these basic categories of new, needs review, translated, final, or signed off. For the toolkit, anything above new, we just consider that you want in your product, if nothing else, just for testing. But if you wanted to build a system around this, you could use these states to indicate whether you wanted to extract those resources or not into the product. So I'm going to go ahead and leave that one as translated. And to save a little bit of time, I'm going to go ahead and come back to all my strings, and I'm just going to say translate all. And what this will do is I only have like one or two strings that my sample provider will support that's an exact match for here. So then it will use the Microsoft Translate service fallback for the rest. So even though I don't have translation memories for all of my strings, I do have translation services. And now as I click through, you'll see that I have translated and needs review. Anything that we do by the Microsoft Translator service comes back as needs review by default. So that's a good way to flag it to your translator that they can look at this file. All right, I'm going to go ahead and save this off. And since there's a lot of machine translation, my friend at work can translate this for me, so I'm going to send it off to him. So one of the ways I'm going to do that is just going to right-click it. I could also multi-select if I had 5 languages, but for this demo, I'm just going to do the one language. And I can just send for translations. And what this does is this provides a very easy way to hand this XLIF file off to one of my friends or family or even a professional translator. And I'm going to send it to him in email. I could put it into a compressed file, which would work really well if I have 20 languages I'm sending off. But for this case, I'm just going to leave it as a single uncompressed file. And I got the list of files that I'm including in this particular handoff. So I'm going to go ahead and OK. And my mail client's already running, so what it does is it attaches the XLF file. It provides a little bit of instruction saying, here are some resources that need translated. And it provides them a link to the toolkit. So if you execute this in the browser, it will take you to the toolkit, you download and install, and then you can open this file. And now your translator will have the exact same editor with the exact same free Microsoft translation services and any providers they may have pre-installed that are above and beyond what we offer with the toolkit.
So the thing that you can also think about here is if it's a casual translation where it's a friend and they're not a developer and they don't have an IDE, as Cameron previously said, when they click that link, we'll know what they have and we'll give them just that standalone editor so that they aren't getting wrapped up in what an IDE is and how it installs and how that messes with their box. If they have Visual Studio, they have the option, they'll get the full download opportunity and they can go ahead and set up the multilingual app toolkit in its entirety as an extension plus the editor.
Yeah.
So we give control over to everybody in this way, in a simple way.
Yes. And a lot of the developers I know have friends who speak different languages and they have a common language and they share files. This makes it a really easy way to, even with your developer community, to share if you want to do, you know, five translations because you have five native speakers in your organization or your friendship circles. Okay. So I've sent this off to Mark. Mark has said, hey, really cool, love this editor, let me translate these and send them back to you. And so he sent them back, I got an email and I've already detached the file, or he dropped it on my shared SkyDrive account. So I'm gonna go ahead and import the translations for here. So he dropped it on my SkyDrive and here's the file that I sent him. So I'm just gonna re-import this. And I'm importing rather than just overwriting, because I may have added new strings. I may have recompiled my project, I may have changed some stuff. The import will make sure we have an alignment, so I won't get extra strings placed in, and I won't miss any ones that may not have been there previously. It will also ensure that the state of it is appropriate for the import. So now I have my French, and I'm good to go. So let's go ahead and change my language preferences. So French is first, and I'm going to go ahead and run this app again. And this is just a very simple application to use for, like, you know, your internal network for your work, because it's a demo. Okay, and while production didn't change, you can see that I do have my French strings in here. Okay, pretty straightforward. But now you're going, yeah, but I gotta do that all the time. Every time I have a new project, I have to do that. Every time, I've got my phone version of the app here. I don't wanna have to do that for the phone. So what can you do for me for the phone? So let's set the phone as our startup project. Let's enable the toolkit for it. And let's add French. So come down here, add languages, and French. And again, there's our French with our two providers that support it. But I'm not gonna bother machine translating this. I've already got all the translations in my other file. So I'm gonna recycle. And recycle is like a very lightweight translation memory. I don't have to worry about resource IDs. I just have to worry about matching languages and matching strings. So let's go ahead and import this, and I'm already here. So I'll point at my SkyDrive that I used my Windows Store project, and I'll open that up. And we had 31 resources that were imported. So now if I run my Windows Store app, I'm sorry, my Windows Phone app, see, it's all the same anymore, right? And I'm all in English. This is because, by default, it doesn't work with your language preferences from your Windows 8.1 box. So I'm gonna go ahead and stop this and just change this here over to be a French phone. And I'm just gonna change the locale to France and push a quick restart. Fortunately, these new machines are really fast, so this shouldn't take long to restart the editor. Yeah, my home machine, I still don't have the SSD drive in. It's like, I need to go buy one. Okay, that was pretty quick. So I'm not gonna recompile, I'm not gonna reinstall, because we've already done all that, it's already in there. So my work apps, I'm just gonna go ahead and run it, and now you can tell I have French. And if you have resource strings that are similar, if you have projects that work for multiple platforms, this will just give them to you and it'll be a lot less effort. All right.
Thanks, Cameron. There's another area that we want you to also think about, and that's the cost of you sending additional languages out as you're publishing out, the impact on your customers, particularly in places where they may pay for bandwidth, and the size of those payloads as well. Mm-hmm. So what's new in Windows 8.1 is a change to the resource model where you can go ahead and create an app. You can put it in the store. And then you can decide that you have an opportunity to add a language to increase your market share. And when you do that, and you publish to the store again, that is considered an update based on the language preference of your clients out there. So prior to 8.1, when you published multilingual, they all came together in your app. And so if I took your app and it was multilingual app, I would get languages whether I wanted them or not. In 8.1, you get the language as a customer that you want based on your preferences, and nobody else does. So a really good piece on helping with performance and the footprint. There's a lot more to the resource model, and there are a couple of other talks. There's a talk by John Sheehan on Friday that would be good to attend to, that addresses footprint and performance and that initial out-of-box experience for the consumer. And then there's a program talk as well. We've got the links at the back. So,
Jen, I want to interject for a second here. So what you're telling me is if I've written an 8.1 app and I've written it in English, and then I watch this video later online, I can just add Spanish to my application, recompile, send it up, and my English install base won't burn bandwidth, they won't have to take a larger footprint, but now my Spanish-speaking community will see it in the store in Spanish, and they can download it, and they don't have to worry about the English footprint.
That's exactly right. As long as you respect what we do for the resource model, so you don't version, that would cause an update for everybody. We just treat the language additions as an update, and they just go out to the people that want them.
That's great.
Yep. Okay. So here's some takeaways from the talk today that we think we've put out there. There is a very large global market opportunity. We've got 230 markets. We've got 106 languages. By general availability, we'll have the ability for developers to sign up in 191 markets. So the scale is quite large. We want you to think about the markets within your markets because of the fact that we're very much a multilingual state everywhere. If you give me what the dominant language of New York City is, I would challenge you to tell me what that one is. We've talked a bit about being localizable by design, how you set up your environment so that you can leverage some nice tools. We've addressed that there are enhancements to the existing APIs. There's new APIs. The APIs that we've shown you also are supported in JavaScript, so you know you can take a look at how this relates to Windows web apps. We've given you a quick overview of the Multilingual App Toolkit in version 2.0, which went live this morning, and just touched on the resource packs. Okay, we have some resources for you. As part of Build, we went ahead and talked with the MS Press folks, and we've got the Microsoft Manual of Style available for all attendees. If you go to this link at O'Reilly, you'll see that there's a place to enter the code Build. You do that, and then you get the English version of the style guide for free as a download, as an ebook. Okay? And you can see that that's true until 6/29, so please act on it while you're here. It's O'Reilly.com, go MS Manual of Style, code Build. Okay, and it'll cost you nothing. Okay, John Sheehan's talk, First Impressions Matter. Okay, that is Friday, look it up. Jason Salome talks about reducing your app disk footprint in a pre-recorded session that you can watch at your leisure. Please do that. You can see that we've got the language portal I mentioned about linked there. The string glossary area, it's subscription-based. You use either your MSDN or your TechNet subscription to get access to those. And those are UI strings for all of our products that we post up there, and they're available to you. You can see where our globalization APIs are, the Windows Store app, download areas. Diana, time zone standard. We talked a bit about standards and where those standards come from. And application resources and localization sample from today. Another piece that we mentioned a number of times was a .xlf extension to the language resource files that our multilingual resource project management was managing. That .xlf is xlif, which is an industry standard for localization schema for transporting strings back and forth. Microsoft is committed to supporting standards, and this particular standard is well understood by all translation vendors out there at just about any scale of translation. So by using that format, you can be assured that what you hand off can be handled by any number of translation sources, in addition to us showing a round trip with our editors, so that you've got a complete story there. You don't have to worry about that, and you can keep your own source code secure and with you as you send those out and back. Okay? So at this point, we'd like to know if there are any questions. We have a question right here. Okay, the question is, how do we handle right-to-left or bidirectional?
So from a standpoint that you can set your flow control for the Windows Store apps, and that will set it for you that way. You can pick it up. So let me see if I can have that for you here, I think. Did I put it in this one? You can put that in so it automatically picks up your, I'm not sure I have it in this code, actually. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't put it in here. But you can pick up the current language of your system, and you can just set the left or right flag accordingly. You can also put it in your XAML, and there's also some code you can put it in your JavaScript apps. And then the Windows environment will automatically adjust to it. The toolkit is abstracted from that. The toolkit provides for localization. If we look at a phone project, however, the phone has done it by adding in the left to right and the resource language. Yes, thank you.
It's coming.
And the resource language. I'll unhighlight those now so they're easier to read. If this, what we do with the toolkit for this particular case, since this is the implementation detail they did with the Phone 8, is we will actually determine the orientation of the text for the language and automatically look at this for you. So if I were to add Arabic into this, this would turn to right to left automatically.
Got a question over here. Okay, so we've got two questions. I didn't quite get the first one. The second one was, does this work with SharePoint 2013?
Right. So the first one was using it with web farms, like a ASP.NET web farm. We currently are targeting Windows Store and Windows Phone apps. So the tool wouldn't work directly because we don't understand ResX files per se. Although the string resources of a ResX file and a ResW file is the same format, so you could take an extra step and cut and paste once you've translated using the toolkit for that. The second question about whether it, now I've lost the question.
SharePoint 2013.
Yeah, with SharePoint 2013. We are currently not integrated into SharePoint 2013. I believe they are doing stuff with Microsoft Translator Service, but that's separate from what we're doing with the toolkit.
Mm-hmm. Question?
Yeah.
So the question is about the cultural relevance of the APIs, whether a gesture is relevant in one market or another?
Yeah, you know, let's say voice-based, right? I mean, speech recognition, you saw examples today. How does that fit into a global Windows 8 and Windows 10 app? And what impact does, you know, as developers, you need to have in the forefront to make sure that you're incorporating some of that? You know, are they fundamental APIs at the globalization?
So let me take this one. So the question is, new features such as text-to-speech, translation, those type of APIs that we saw in some of the demos today, those are generally provided by Bing and the Microsoft Translator Service. So rather than being a globalization API, and I'm not the expert on this, but rather than a globalization API, those are more of a software as a service type concept. So those are connecting to a cloud service and getting the data down. They're not built into like a static DLL. Does that answer the question? Close enough, okay.
Yes, we have a question.
So, repeat the question. So we showed a lot of the XAML code today, C# and XAML, and the question was, would this be the same in a Java environment? So the globalization APIs for Java weren't the same as they were for the C# XAML world with 8.0. I don't have the full list to know. I have an exact one-to-one match, but I've been told that they are now the same. So what happens is if you have the API set for your C++ or your C# app or your C++ app, you also have the same API set available for JavaScript. The toolkit also works for JavaScript. So if you have a Windows Store 8.1 app and you've written your res.json files, we will pick up the output of those and we will make it into the exif file so that you can use the same translation workflow as well. Any other questions? Hard to see out there sometimes. All right. Well, thank you very much for attending today. The toolkit and everything you've seen here today is available for download off of the MSDN. Just go under Windows Developer Tools, and all the links should be available for you. Enjoy your Windows 8.1 preview, and let us know if you have any questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.